Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud is brought to you by Academy for Educators, online professional development for teachers and leaders. Online courses, modules, and micro-credential programs for teachers to enhance their skill sets. Now featuring the instructional coaching micro-credential, including 5 online modules framed around the work of Steve Barkley. Learn, grow, inspire. AcademyForEducators.org.
Hello, and welcome to the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. For over 3 decades, I've had the opportunity to learn with educators at all levels, both nationally and internationally. I invite you to listen as I explore my thoughts and learning on a variety of topics connected to teaching, learning, and leading with some of the best and brightest educators from around the globe. Thanks for listening in. Supporting teachers' use of flash feedback. On today's podcast, I am joined by Matthew Johnson, the author of Flash Feedback, Responding to Student Writing Better and Faster Without Burning Out. When I read an article on Matt's book, I was intrigued, and so I dropped him a note, and he agreed to join us here today. I want to add that in addition, you'll find Matt's writing in Edutopia, the National Writing Project, and in EdWeek. So, Matt, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Steve.
I wondered if you would start out by telling us a little bit of the story that led to your exploration of the concepts behind flash feedback.
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to. So, the story starts out as, I think, a pretty similar one for a lot of newer teachers, especially in the humanities, which is that I found myself very quickly, once I began my teaching career, working most weekends, most nights, a lot of early mornings, just trying mainly, more than anything else, trying to beat back all the papers that just kept cascading on me in sort of a never-ending torrent of student work. At the time I was actually living in California, not far from the beach, in like a little, it was about the size of a shoebox, but it was an apartment that was close to the beach, which for a Midwestern boy like me was very exciting. I just have this image burned in my brain of like looking out, seeing the sunshine, seeing the beach, and just looking at the stack of papers and being like, okay, maybe tomorrow. And that's, you know, how I spent a lot of those weeks in my first years of teaching. Making matters all the more frustrating was I felt like I would take these papers and I would just cover them in comments and I would have all these thoughts, and then the students would make the same mistake again, or they'd be walking out the door and I'd see them just kind of flip it in the recycle bin. So eventually I got to a point where I really loved teaching. I loved everything about it. I loved the challenge. I loved waking up every day trying to think about how to like help young people out and how to help them gain skills. I even just love like the sound of a school building, kind of that buzz that you have. I loved everything about it, but I could not continue if this was going to be my next 40 years, if it was going to be like that. It just, the papers were just wearing me down. And so I was, you know, very, very seriously thinking about, in fact, I did sort of briefly leaving the profession, like so many young teachers do. I was lucky around that time, it's probably more than we have time to go into, to get some mentors in my life, the chief one being Linda Christensen from the Oregon Writing Project, who's just amazing, who kind of showed me that like this choice I had constructed in my mind of either having to choose a life where I'm just submerged in papers all the time, or a life of balance, but then I can't, you know, be in the classroom, I gotta go find something else, that was a false choice. That papers don't have to be like that. And in fact, they can be one of the best parts of the job. They can be the part where you build those connections with students, where you empower them, where you build up their academic identities, where you actually really move their reading and writing forward in a way that is almost unmatched. And so what I decided to do, around my fifth year of teaching, is I just started looking into, okay, how can I be better at getting feedback to students faster?
Can I stop you 1 second? Because I want to check. I think I heard 2 problems that you were dealing with. So the one problem was that it just ate up a ridiculous amount of your time. But did I also hear that it didn't get the impact in improving student writing that you wanted it to get?
No, it was kind of like the Bill Murray movie Groundhog Day, which maybe we're all a bit more familiar with right now, which is, you know, it just felt like every paper I would make the same comments to the same students. And it was just perpetual. And that was maybe even more frustrating than the time I was going to be killing my nights and weekends. I wanted to at least be doing it for a reason, but it felt like English teachers were supposed to do this, right? I'm supposed to go through and have these papers and this is my job. And so the two coming together was really what was the most demoralizing. And so, you know, I mean, and so that's actually, you know, what led me to writing a book is originally I was just doing this for myself. I was like, how can I find a way to respond to student work, which is incredibly important. And feedback is incredibly important. It's one of the most effective teaching tools we have, but in a way where the nights and weekends can be mine, where I can get that rest, where I can have a family, where I can have friends and a life. And so I started out initially just for me that but once I started to learn more and more and get my practices under control, I looked around and I saw so many other teachers struggling with the same things. And so that's when I started to write about it and was lucky enough to have an opportunity to turn it into a book.
In an article that you wrote, you identified the elements of what makes feedback effective. And you kind of suggested that because of those elements, that was one of the reasons that it wasn't easy. So I wondered if you'd touch on those elements that you're looking for in feedback that's effective.
Yeah, sure. And the elements of effective feedback are pretty, like when you think about them, they're pretty logical, but they're quite rare and kind of in our world in general, but certainly in a practicing classroom. So one of the biggest ones is that feedback is much more effective when it comes in a formative stage as opposed to a summative stage. So when it comes in the middle of learning and students can do something with it, as opposed to at the end is sort of an autopsy of like, oops, I guess here's what you could have done. And so having it be formative. Another one is that it comes in a timely fashion. And this makes a lot of sense, right? That when you do something, if you get feedback, you know, now or in an hour or that day, as opposed to 3 weeks later, so during some of my first years, like a month later, that's going to be more effective, right? That makes a lot of sense. That it happens regularly. I think we get so overwhelmed, certainly in the humanity side of things, that sometimes we can easily go 4 or 6 weeks without any real feedback to students. But regular feedback is incredibly important, not intermittent. That it outlines a clear path forward, that feedback has creates a path for students. And this is tied to student motivation. Student motivation is largely contingent on, do they think that this is valuable, but also do they think they can do it? And so making it very clear that yes, you can do this, there's a clear path for you, that it's focused, that we don't try and overload it. Anytime you try and cram too much feedback in, it has the opposite effect of usually not learning anything. And then lastly, that it's separated from assessment, that when you put assessment and feedback together, feedback loses. Pretty much every single time, which makes sense, right? Kids are like, you know, when you see a grade, the student would be like, oh yeah, like, okay, I got, you know, this is all about, they're much more focused on the grade than the assessment because they've been trained to be focused on the grade as opposed to the assessment.
The first time that I read that research about grading and feedback, I hated sharing it in any audience where I knew I had high school English teachers. You know, the feedback or the research is pretty clear. If you're giving feedback on a graded paper, you're probably wasting your time.
Totally. Yes. Right. And that's what I did. Right. Those first 5 years, that's what I did. All of my feedback was mostly, frankly, spent justifying the grade that I gave. That's not best practice, right? And it also means that that's why those hours, it's a part of the reason why those hours I was spending didn't really amount to what I was hoping that they would amount to, right? And if you think about feedback in schools, more often than not, it is summative as opposed to formative. It's irregular because we get so overwhelmed and there's so much. I mean, I have 163 students, right? You know, there's so much to do. Yeah. We often are very quick and curt as opposed to having a clear path forward because our time is really pressed. And we put assessment and feedback together because, wait, I'm supposed to read this twice? Like, reading it once almost killed me.
A buzzer went off in my head on a jumping connection there that... when I'm working with school administrators who are frustrated with the time they have to spend in teacher evaluation, they would rather spend the time coaching. But then the problem is they try to coach during the evaluation.
and it ends up having that same carryover effect. The teacher getting the feedback in that evaluation setting isn't processing the feedback as future oriented. As I was listening to you, I was hearing feedback is actually motivational.
No, and think about that teacher, right? You're processing, am I going to have my job next year? It's like, how can you focus on something like feedback, which is like, you know, kind of like meant to help move you forward? It's the state you're in now, and then we're moving you forward to somewhere better. How can you focus on that when you're simultaneously dealing with assessment, which is a rating of where you are at right now? And for, you know, teachers and administrators, that assessment really matters, right? That's your livelihood. And so it's going to be very, very hard to focus on feedback when that's the case.
Matt, in the piece that I read, you identified four different elements of flash feedback. And I wondered if I just kind of laid them out one at a time, if you could give us a little detail on each one. So the first one that you shared was focus one or two.
Yeah. So the idea there is basically that the way that I was trained, and this was just largely through modeling, I don't know if I ever read anything on how to provide feedback when I was in school, was how my teachers had done it to me, which is they get comments and they put them all throughout the margins of my paper, and they're kind of in this English teacher shorthand. And if you look at them and you actually break down a paper like that, there are dozens of lessons simultaneously going on. And when we do that, the analogy I like to use is like, it's sort of like trying to catch like a ball. We were just talking about football, you know, earlier. Like catching a football is tricky, but if you get some practice, it's not so bad. You can catch it most of the time, right? But if somebody was to lob 20 footballs at you simultaneously, you catch zero of them because you're just ducking for cover. And I think that's what our students are doing, right? They're a lot of the time they're ducking for cover when they see that. And this is especially true for the students who have the most fraught relationship with writing and with school. They look at it and they say, well, that's another example of me failing. Look at all those comments right there. And they're just going to discard it, right? It's going to be more painful to read that than it is to, so they're not even going to read it, right? They're just going to set it aside. And so the idea is that it's actually good practice and it's time saving. It's worth noting this saves time as well. If you focus on one or two things, you don't try and turn them into, you know, Zora Neale Hurston or Ernest Hemingway in like one paper, right? Or they take them here. You take the one or two biggest things that they need to work on and you go deep and you're human about it and you find and you really outline a path for where they can go. And that's going to lead to a lot more learning because they're really going to learn that lesson. And you also have to create space for them to learn that lesson afterwards and through conferences and through requiring them to use your feedback and to use their peers' feedback and their own feedback. But that's going to lead to a lesson. And then the next paper, you can work on the next thing, right? It's like we have time here. We don't need to do it all at once.
It's interesting. I had an elementary example of that where I was working in a school where one teacher at the third grade level was getting substantially more student improvement in writing than the other teachers were. And she couldn't tell us what it was that she was doing. It was kind of natural for her. And so we had to do quite a bit of observation. But one of the early observations that the other teachers identified is very often in an elementary classroom, students are writing, they may just be doing a paragraph and they're bringing it to the teacher. And in her classroom, they would come and she would look at it. And when she had something for them to work on, off they went. Where in the other classrooms, the teacher was going through the whole piece. And pretty soon there was this long line of kids waiting for the teacher's feedback. And so after a period, you had kids spending more time waiting than they were spending writing. And it was the explanation that she shared is what got her to it is if she gave the kids three things, by the time they got back to their seat, they couldn't remember the three of them. anyway, so giving them one and letting them go work on that and catch it and then come back. So it's an elementary example of what you're describing.
Well, and that line is a great apt analogy for like a high school, you know, language arts teacher like I am. Like if I'm trying to do that, give everybody every thought that passes through my head on every paper, that line's going to sort of metaphorically form and that like it's going to be a month till they get this thing back.
Got it.
And the thing is, it's actually more effective for me to just give them that one thing, go deep on it. And that's going to take less time for you can do it. So you can, it also keeps the line down and it's more effective. It's one of the beautiful win-wins that, that comes along. And there's not many of those in life. So you got to celebrate them.
You use the term, students do heavy lifting.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's tied to this, which is that I also used to go through and just make all of the changes, right? If it was a comma splice, I would use a little carrots and put an and there. And I would, you know, if there was, if it was time for a new paragraph, I'd be like, new paragraph. I was acting as a copy editor or a Scantron machine.
Yeah.
And the thing about that is, whoever does the work learns the lesson. And so when I do that, it also means that I'm doing the work. I'm working real hard, but they just go and make the change, you know, blindly make the change and they move on. I think we sometimes think, like, well, we'll think about why there's this change. And they're like, no, they have five other classes or six other classes. They have their after school stuff. They're just going to make that change and get it into me. So instead, you know, if commas are a really big deal and I really want to focus on that, then maybe I'll say, you know, I'll point out one comma splice. I'll go deep. I'll explain what a comma splice is. Here are some resources on it. Here's the issue with it. That would be our focus area for this piece right now. And then I'll say, you have 12 other comma splices on this page
alone. Gotcha.
Go fix them, right? You know, that's your job, is to find them and fix them. And that's going to take a lot. You know, the students are doing the heavy lifting, right? I'm also a huge fan of having students self-grade, not only because it has been shown in research to be very effective that when students self-assess themselves and self-grade, it leads to significant learning because of metacognition and all of these things. It forces their hand to that, but also because I don't have to then justify like the grade. It's not, instead of it me giving them a grade, it's a conversation that we're having and they're starting the conversation. And it's a lot easier to just sort of agree and say, yeah, you know, and I frankly wish I didn't have to give grades at all, but I do.
Yeah.
So I find that having them self-grade and having that start a conversation is so much faster, but it's also so much more meaningful because I don't have to justify it. They've already kind of laid out the case and then I just have to agree or kind of like say, oh, well, what do you think about this? Let's have a conversation about that. And it's only a handful of students who I really end up having a conversation with. Most mm-hmm. of them, they have a very good sense for what they need to work on and what they don't. And so, you know, finding these moments for them to do the work that traditionally has been done by us is actually another one of these win-wins. It's better practice and it takes, you know, takes something off of our plates, which is really important.
How about utilizing systems and technology?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of things like a grading program that like grades like a piece of writing or something like that. I haven't seen any evidence yet of one that I think is really worth much of anything outside of like little like cosmetic changes and things like that. But if somebody knows of one, you know, send it to me because I'm always curious about that, but I haven't seen anything yet. We do have some really great just sort of basic programs that you do not have to be a techie to utilize really well. And one of my favorites is just simply Google Docs or like any sort of modern like editing program in that like we talked earlier about how formative feedback is more important than summative. So I give my students larger papers a close look while they're drafting it, which means that, you know, I've got to look at it again. And you're like, well, how can you do that in a way that's time effective? The answer is revision history. If I hit, there's a literal button that says see new changes since you last looked at it. So you can think, you already have the knowledge of where it was at.
Okay.
You already have your feedback that you gave them. You look at that, you look at their self-grade, and you can very quickly come to a sense of kind of like what a reasonable assessment of this paper is. You don't need to be a techie to figure out revision history. I love that. Or, you know, voice like apps. You know, we can talk faster than we can write for a lot of us. There was actually some research I saw this summer that said in some contexts, a voice message describing students, like, you know, your thoughts on a paper as opposed to a written one is actually three times more effective. There have been other studies that have been less effective than that, but they've all shown that it can be more effective than written. And the thought was that students can't misinterpret your voice in the same way they misinterpret on a page. That oftentimes on a page, they'll be like, oh, he's giving me this because he doesn't like me. Whereas in a voice, they can hear that I'm excited. I'm like, we're moving forward. This is great. Voice apps can be very, Moat is kind of the one I'm using right now, which is a Google plugin, which has worked very well for me because you can kind of, it also has like a translate feature and you can, it can transcribe it, which is useful too for my ELL students.
Great. Great. And the last one you had was, a spillover plan and time for special cases.
Oh, yeah. Well, that one, so that one's kind of tied to the notion of targeted feedback, which, because I've got kind of, you know, various things, but the name of the book, Flash Feedback, comes from this idea that most of the feedback that we give shouldn't just be on a large paper. It shouldn't just be the once a month or once every 2 months that you get a bit large piece of essay. You need to have regular feedback on a regular basis. Well, how do you do that? If I have 163 students, every minute of feedback is roughly 3 hours of my time. So that means I need to give that in under a minute. And I need to have systems in place for that. And so the idea is basically that, like, let's take commas, which we were talking about earlier. My students, you know, like a lot of students, struggle with commas. So instead of focusing on a larger paper, I'll have a paper that I call the comma paper. And it's just all we do is we focus on commas in that paper. And we talk through commas and the various ways they can be used and when you can break rules and how they look with, you know, different dialects. We go deep on commas. And then they write a paper where they have to have at least 20 of them and in ways that are kind of used that makes sense. And using the tech thing, I can use the find function. It lights up every comma on the page, and I can read that thing in 1 minute, just like a one pager on whatever they want. And I can then give them feedback to that really quickly. But a lot of times they've got it down, and then I just say, great job. You know. That's targeted feedback, because they did do a great job. I've looked at all their commas used, and they've got it down. If they don't, then I put the work back on them. I'm like, hey, I noticed two comma splices. let's go and fix those. And I'll even like usually do this during class, so I don't have to bring any papers home. But that also gives them the class time to make the changes, because otherwise they probably won't do it, right? They're like, I don't know. It's good enough. And I don't really let them do good enough on that, because I want them to get it. And so, you know, but the idea there is there's always going to be that special case. And so that's the spillover period, is that you have that. That's kind of tied to that larger flash feedback idea of like, when we set, you know, if we can do these targeted moments of feedback that are very carefully set up, there's always going to be a moment where it falls apart. So you have to have something that's built in for that, because that's going to happen. But for most of them, it's not. I mean, with the comma paper, I can give them targeted real feedback on comma usage that pushes them forward more than an entire year of me circling commas on their papers used to. And I can do it in half an hour. I can do it during class while they're doing choice reading. We'll start class with that, they'll do choice reading, and they'll have their feedback before they even walk out.
Cool. Last question here. Knowing that there's lots of people listening to this podcast who are working as instructional coaches and administrators, I wanted them to find out about flash feedback as a way of supporting teachers in teachers' use of it. But I'm wondering if there's any thoughts you have as to how some of the concepts carry over to the way coaches or administrators might give feedback to teachers.
Yeah. So, I mean, the cool thing about feedback is these concepts are pretty universal. It doesn't matter if you're dealing with, like you said, like third graders or high school seniors like I have or teachers. You know, it's the same basic concepts are true. Like formative is better than summative. Yeah. Regular is better than intermittent. Non-judgmental or non-assessment, you know, connected is better than judgmental, or it's connected with an assessment. And that targeted is better than, you know, a scattershot of a dozen things they need to work. And so the cool thing is that's very like, those are universal concepts. So, you know, like you said, if you really want your teachers to take in that feedback that you're giving them, it can't be connected to assessment, right? You know, if their job is literally on the line for this, potentially, it's going to be very hard for them to hear that, because they're going to be trying to justify that I'm doing a good job. No, I got this. You know, they're going to go to that place in their head. And that also means more, you know, formative. But the trick with that is it's the same problem that I have with papers. Time is so limited. Yep. And so crunched, right? And so kind of taking in this idea of like flash feedback, that maybe you pop in for 5 minutes at the start of class with a teacher who's struggling, and you just kind of watch the first 5 minutes and you say, okay, you know, see you later. And then you just check in and you say, hey, you know, loved it, except for here's one thought that you can do for the beginning of class. You know, give it a try and let's check back, you know, a couple of weeks later. You check back a couple of weeks later. I mean, that whole interaction, the 5 minutes pop in, the couple of conversations that follow up, and following up is really important, because we don't learn something unless we come back to it multiple times, adults included. You know, that is a way to have maybe make an active change in a teacher's practice that feels less threatening than there's this big rubric of evaluation that's tied to it. And, you know, I mean, so similar sorts of, you know, like, you know, so these same concepts can sort of be adapted, you know, pretty straightforwardly, whether it's a kindergartner or, you know, a teacher.
Well, Matt, would you tell folks about how to find your website and information about your book?
Yeah. So Flash Feedback is, I think, kind of just available wherever books are sold. So the Corwin, who's the publisher, often has the best price. So it's worth going there first. Even with shipping, it's usually better than anywhere else. And so because they usually have some pretty good deals going on, because they know teachers are struggling right now in particular. My website, I also write, I try to do it weekly, but it has been less, not exactly weekly this year with everything going on. I think everybody's been, pushed about to their limit. But I'm still, kind of trying to get posts out there to help out teachers, because I know that they're really needing it. So that's at MatthewMJohnson.com. The M's important because there's a lot of Matthew Johnsons out there.
All right. We'll be sure to add that in the lead in to the podcast so that that folks can find it. So thank you very much. I enjoyed and some real good thoughts there for teachers as well as for coaches working with them.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate being on. It was fun.
Have a great day.
Thanks again for listening. You can subscribe to Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud on iTunes and Podbean. And please remember to rate and review us on iTunes. I also want to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.